The Meat for TCast is brought to you in part by Sone Lab, a recording studio in East Hampton, Massachusetts. Offering recording, mixing, and mastering of all styles of music, we even master podcasts. Email info@sonelab.com for more information. That's info@sonelab.com.
That's the record button. Have we started?
We have started.
So, this is the Meat for TCast. You might always start like that. Who knows? I'm Elizabeth McDuffie, founding editor of Meat for Tea, the Valley Review, and this is...
I'm Mark Allen Miller, sidekick and co-conspirator in Meat for Tea.
Yeah, and graphic designer and web guy and
the hats.
Host of the Cirques and a whole bunch of stuff.
The hats, there are many.
Hello.
Hello.
Right in bulk to you all.
Yes.
And Groundhog Day. And I mean, if you're listening when we're recording, if you're listening another time, just remember back to when it was that time or look forward to when it will be again. These come around regularly.
Once a year, I think.
Yep. And Valentine's Day is coming up soon. And because we love you.
We love you.
We have a discount code in our spring store to give you free shipping.
Free shipping, I believe, yes.
Because I don't know how the weather is where you live, but it's until today, the last 2 days, it was cold to such a degree that I was inspired to make up a new word. And the new word is engrumpened. I'd love if you'd all call in and leave us a voice memo with you utilizing engrumpened in a sentence.
I think it's a perfectly Cromulent word. Hi, welcome to season 4, episode 17 of the Meat for Tea cast. I think that's the longest we've ever taken before we've actually mentioned what we're doing.
So, yeah, well, because we love you, we do have a discount code in our spring store. In honor of the season, it's Valentee, so V-A-L-E-N-T-E-A, to get you free shipping because you might be feeling like you want a hoodie
or
a long sleeve t-shirt
or a short sleeve t-shirt or a tote bag
or a pint glass.
I think I said pint glass.
Or a mug.
I think they need 2 pint glasses, that's why.
Well, one for you and one for your other fist.
Oh, brother. I guess we're in housekeeping already, aren't we?
Well, yeah, I guess it's the first thing I saw. So if you're wondering, other than shopping our spring store, how you can support this podcast that you love so much and other people do too, I checked again today and we're holding firm in our ranking of number 1 in the indie performing arts category on Good Pods.
Wow. Still? Awesome.
Just holding firm there.
Thanks, folks.
You checked in a little while ago. We were number 2 in overall performing arts podcasts.
I think so.
Under only Invisible Brain?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Hidden Brain.
That's what it was.
Well, that's freaking huge. So how do you support us? You go to our website, meatforte.com, and you will see an array of things you can do, from purchasing $5 PDFs of the magazine, which, man, you could just get every single issue, couldn't you? You could just have a full collection at that price, and your bookshelves would still have empty spaces on them. But if it's empty spaces on your bookshelves you want to avoid, then you can buy physical copies of Meat for Tea or treat yourself and your Valentine to a subscription.
Or join our Patreon for extra bonus stuff.
Yeah, join our Patreon. We are always adding Patreon content. We will be adding more soon, and there's a good amount of things for you to enjoy now.
Yeah. So, why are we here today?
Well, we're here because we have a new book coming out soon.
On Meat for Tea Press.
Oh, so speaking of new books, since we're known to be tangential, right? You guys like that about us. We should just talk briefly about the exciting news we have about John Yamris's book, which we recently released, 24 Poems.
Oh, yeah.
Which is going into an Albanian translation. And the translator who did it just recently released a book of Allen Ginsberg's poems translated. We'll put his name in the show notes because my Albanian might be a little rusty or non-existent.
Plus, I don't even have his name in front of me. So in the show notes down below, we will have.
We'll be sure to list
his name.
But we have a new book coming out very soon called Midnight Glossolalia by a most talented and tremendous trio of poets. And they are Scott Ferry.
Yeah, Lauren Scharhag.
And Lillian Nekakov. And they have a beautiful structure for this one. I've not seen before. I'm not going to say it hasn't been done, but they each write 7 poems and each poet responds in turn to the other one's poems. So it's a lovely braid of poetry you'll encounter.
Yeah, it's really quite something. Really, it's really quite something.
Spectacular. So I have a wonderful conversation with these folks who've come to be my friends without us physically even meeting. And they read some great selections from the book. And you should have a wonderful time listening to them. It's just such good stuff.
It's terrific. I think maybe one more thing before we tuck into that is we should read a couple of reviews that we've gotten recently.
Got a couple of reviews in Good Pods. Thank you for leaving reviews in Good Pods.
Yeah.
You can also, you know, one really cool way to keep us up in the algorithms, which not only helps our numbers, but helps your friends to find this podcast that you've been raving about, because I know you have. So you can just leave your 5-star review anywhere you can. I hear there's a lot of places now where that's possible. And then whatever you say in writing, just copy and paste that and get it into CastBox, get it into Apple Podcasts, get it into Good Pods. We don't mean to make you do extra work in this era of copy and paste.
In this era of copy and paste, we've been copy pasting for ages.
We have.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
So do that.
Yes, go do that.
And maybe just call in and leave us a voice memo of you reading your review for us to play on the podcast. We'd love to hear your voices.
Yeah, you can record it on your phone or whatever and send it to meetforteacast@gmail.com. Any correspondence can go there. So on season 4, episode 16, which was the 3rd installment of our Pushcart nominees, go back and listen to it if you haven't heard it, with Mary Buchinger and Mark Liu, we had actually another Meet for Tea alum, Tam Fricke. And she wrote, "Great readings and a wonderful series. Thought-provoking and insightful. My workaday is always a bit lighter listening to the TeaCast." Thanks, Tam.
Thanks, Tam. We love you.
Yes, we love you, Tam.
I would advise you to listen to that whole Pushcart series, starting with the first and moving on. That's not a hard and fast rule. That's just what I suggest. So we also have a lovely review on season 4, episode 10, which is with Scott Ferry from his partner in poetry crime, Lil Nekakov. "What a fabulous episode. Scott Ferry's work is electrifying. Love the discussion around the writing process. Bravo."
Wow.
Thank you, Lil.
Yeah, thanks, Lil. That's awesome.
Bravo to you for collaborating with Scott and Lauren on Midnight Glossolalia. I've come to know those three as the Midnight Glossers.
Or the Glossers, just the Glossers.
Midnight Glossers. They need a secret handshake. They need leather jackets. They need motorcycles.
Oh, there you go. There you go. They meet down in the corner. every Friday night.
Like the Wild Bunch.
Shall we tuck into this?
I think we should.
I think we should. So here's Elizabeth's conversation with the Midnight Glossers.
So let me officially welcome you guys. I am excited to welcome the trio I have nicknamed the Midnight Glossers to the Meat for Tea cast. And the Midnight Glossers consist of none other than the extraordinary talents of Lauren Sharhag and Scott Ferry and Lillian Nikakov. So welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Excited to be here.
I think we should really, we should have some kind of theme song for the Midnight Glossers.
Well, you've heard that. About the Midnight Glossers. I think you might be able to go ahead and adapt that classic Stone song and make it fit syllabically. I suspect it would.
I've been listening to Old Gods of Appalachia, and so I immediately thought, when you said that, I immediately thought of some kind of like blues, bluegrass, folksy type song like that, the Midnight Glossers.
Oh my God, as performed by the his name is escaping me but by the brilliant guy who does the opening song.
Yes, that's exactly who I was thinking.
I'm so hooked on that podcast. I love it so much.
It is so good.
It's so brilliant. I know. I want to get in touch with them and try to like make a collaboration happen.
Hopefully the song isn't
deliver us.
Yeah. That's right. We went there.
Yeah, but I could see that too. I agree with you, Lauren. Something really kind of bluesy and kind of, yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Have you guys worked out a secret handshake yet? I feel like the Midnight Glossers should have a secret handshake.
Yeah, I think we should. The only problem is that we live so far apart that we can't actually, we'd have to do it over, you know, like Zoom or something. And that's not the same as doing it in person. So,
right.
I have faith that we'll eventually all meet up at some point.
Oh, yeah. That would be awesome. Yeah.
In the meantime, I think of us as kind of a devil's triangle.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think that's great. And you guys definitely need t-shirts and jackets. They need to happen. I mean, our wonderful, Shirley.
Oh, she just passed.
Yeah.
I picture bowling jackets like theirs, but with Midnight Glossers.
That'd be so cool.
That's what comes to mind.
So, something like the Sweat Hogs, but not.
But maybe.
I've just applied for a bunch of writing grants from the Ontario Arts Council here, and I was thinking, oh, if I get a couple of grants, I could fund the shirts and the jackets. But I'm sure that's not what they want the money to go to.
Hey, it's necessary.
It is.
When you guys take your Midnight Glossolalia reading tour on the road, you'll want to be appropriately attired.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just so excited that it came together like it did. I mean, I kind of floated the idea to these guys, and they snapped it up very quickly. Because I saw other people doing collaborations, and I'm like, you know, I know just the people, and I know just the subject matter, and I think the dark ghostly subject matter came pretty quickly too.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Scott and Lillian are literally the only two people I would be willing to collaborate with on anything. So when Scott suggested it, I was like, oh my God, yes.
Yeah, it was great.
Because I did a 6-book series with a co-author, and I thought I will never do that again.
Yeah, it was great because we were so fired up about each other's work anyways to begin with. And you know, we've never met in person, and you know, we've just met through Facebook, and But there was that real sort of bond and that connection and that kinship. And then when Scott suggested the project, I was just like, wow, yeah, because I really think that we're all going to get each other. And the fact that we all jumped on it and the fact that we wrote it so quickly was amazing to me, because it's just like, I mean, what did we write it within, like 3 months or something like that? Was it?
Wow.
Something like that. Yeah. Cause I think we got started like the end of April, and then we were done by the beginning of September.
Yep.
Yeah. And it was just a good synergy. You know, we would, I would see one of your poems pop up and I went, I know exactly what to do with that. It was just like a cool little morsel that I had to dive into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your poems served as prompts for each other's responses.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them are more loosely connected than others, and some are very connected. It's just kind of, it's like a weave in and out of, and it goes some very, very interesting places.
Yeah, I really enjoyed how, I would write something and you guys would respond, you would go in directions I never would have thought of, which, you know, was really the whole point. You know, it was part of the fun.
Yeah, exactly. And I've done a couple of collaborations before. And I have another book coming out in May that I did. But it's very different than this, because even though we went in different directions, like Lauren says, and we moved into like different realms that really I haven't really touched on in my writing up until this point, there was always that connecting thread, something that pulled us back together, so that in the end, the whole thing to me was like a tapestry. The pieces are obviously very separate, but they're really connected as well. So there was that, you know, thread that brought us all together. And we always kind of brought it back to the core of what we wanted the theme to be. Yeah.
And it was kind of like three-dimensional, almost like you could touch it at the end, because there are three voices in it. And it was a very, I don't say dense, but it had an aura about it and a feeling of presence at the end of it. I'm like, wow, this is like walking into a room and feeling all three of our presences there very strongly. Mm-hmm. It started to breathe on its own.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys felt this way too, but I felt the whole time we were working on it too. I felt kind of like and maybe this is also just part of the synergy, but I felt kind of like the group possession was happening. Yeah, you know, the three of us had the same spirit moving through us at the same time.
Oh yeah, very much
absolutely.
So. And it's interesting because, you know, there's always that loneliness when you're writing kind of on your own, right? You feel like it's just you, you're inside yourself and you know, but this was great because we were able to, I don't know about you guys, but I felt like I was able to say things that I might not have said or that I was afraid to say had I been just doing it on my own. Do you know what I mean?
For sure. For sure. I feel like this collaboration definitely drove me to write things and to dig deeper in ways that I wouldn't on my own. Yes. I guess part of it was you're emboldened to do it. Yep. But also, you know, it's like there's a, you guys made a safe space for it too. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I remember one poem I got kind of risque. It was like, I don't know, it kind of got off towards talking about, you know, my private parts. And then I'm like, how are you guys gonna respond to that? And then Laura responded about a woman who flashed in a supermarket. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be writing about this stuff. Lauren wouldn't necessarily be writing about that stuff. But it was really interesting to see how we were just allowed each other to do that.
I love that.
Yeah, right.
You guys, like, pushed each other out of your comfort zones, you think?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And it was darker than I would have written on my own. I always try to give a lot more hope But not to say this is hopeless or, you know, without hope. It was just darker than I would have gone on my own. And I think that that's really cool. I really liked it.
Yeah.
Well, as a reader, it's such a transformative journey reading through the manuscript. It's a nourishing read. You feel like you've taken in something of substance.
Like absolutely
into your body. I guess if you start throwing around glossolalia, then transubstantiation has to fall in there somewhere into the mix.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that one of the things that draws the three of us together is I think we recognize authenticity in each other. And so when you put the three people like that together, you know, and we have this nice chorus going, I think I like to think that people can feel that. I've always felt that readers are always more drawn to what is real. You know, they can tell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking today that, you know, of course, we lost Charles Simic recently. He was such a fantastic poet and such a, love him, but.
Me too.
He said something so wonderful. He said that a beautiful poem is a secret shared between two people who have never met face to face. And that's what I felt that we were doing. It was like we were sharing these wonderful secrets with one another and just kind of opening up to each other. And I felt so like, even though like Scott says, there's a lot of dark stuff in the work, but I felt a lot of joy and I felt buoyed by the whole project and very inspired and just grateful for both their generosity and their support. It was a very different writing experience for me.
Yeah. Well, and going back to Scott's penis poem, you know, I feel like we were able to figuratively get naked in front of each other.
Yeah.
If I meet you in person, I won't flash you. I promise. But I felt like intellectually we got comfortable enough with each other to really bear everything.
It's such an experience to be able to eavesdrop on that as the reader and take that process of exposure in. It's thrilling, actually. Lauren, I wonder if you just didn't provide a perfect segue for the first of our readings, because of course I want you guys to be reading from this manuscript. I'm so thrilled to have the Meet for Tea Press imprint on it. I'm really grateful. I love it. But why don't you just start us off in the most comfortable of all places, Scott, with your penis poem.
That's like one of my favorites in the book, Scott. And
I love it.
You know, that's what I think of it as, is just Scott's penis poem.
Yeah. I love that.
I don't actually have it right here in front of me.
That's okay. You can get it.
Okay. You guys talk amongst yourselves. Okay. One moment.
We'll call the SPP from henceforth.
Yeah.
We should change the title of the manuscript.
the entire manuscript, just make it.
Yes. I'm joking.
Penis poems and other works.
Yeah.
but he's right, though, that I never would. I don't think I hadn't thought about the woman's, you know, the woman who flashed us her pussy in the supermarket for years. And when I read his penis poem, I was like, oh, that reminds me of that.
Scott said when I read his piece, and then I don't know, somewhere further down the road, I had a field of amethyst penises in my poem too, which again, I don't think I ever would have used that metaphor or image rather. Sorry.
Well, I have now retrieved my penis poem.
Yeah. Not your,
see what I did there?
Not your appendage.
I like that. I like the pause.
Me too. That was a pregnant pause, shall we say.
So this one, I was trying to find a place to publish it, and I published it in Horror Slees Trash, which is like horror and kind of like softcore porn and poetry. So it got in there. It was awesome.
Awesome.
So this one's called Dry Dream. I wake up one morning with my mental cereal in the fridge and my milk in the cupboard. My penis holds up my glasses. My eyes gauze in prayer. I have already begun to slip worms into mouths and tongues on hooks. The arrhythmias have foretold it all along. If I flip it along the Purkinje fibers, the heart becomes an insular sun. Don't forget to clean up the semen on the catastrophes. I haven't even come yet. I'm already asleep. So the changes have begun. Crow claw on vinyl and Thelonious twinkles through the tinkle. I don't reason this is a slack-kneed prophecy, that this is a foreskin lantern of lost gods. I can't shake the rubber tongue, can't breathe without cost, can't dance without rubbing some nipple, can't wash this electric fence with holy hoses. And yes, when I wake, I am a lobster in an egret suit with a case of dildos and a Jesus bicycle. I can't ride either, so this must be another broken river regurgitating milk-bloated sirens, all of their eyes coins.
My poetry slam snaps. I have to say, I just really appreciate the way you read, Scott. I've brought my youngest daughter with me to a lot of meet for tea events and readings. She's turning 30, actually, this March. But she used to always turn to me and be like, I hate how some people read in that poetry voice. and then she would mock it and just like do this like somber intonations with the dramatic pauses and, you know, and she's like, Mommy, when you read your poetry, it's just like when you read me my stories, it's just, you just read it. And that's my praise for you, Scott, is you just read it. And I really appreciate that.
Well, I could read my poems like this if you want me to.
No, thank you.
Don't. Poetry voice.
Well, now we got to hear Lauren's vagina poem.
We certainly do. We've got to read all the poems written in response to the penis poem.
Right.
My husband is laughing in the background.
All right. My response to that poem is Hecate on Independence Avenue. When I was a kid, my grandmother and great-grandmother would take us shopping with them on Independence Avenue. The closest Price Chopper was there, a TGNY, Texas Toms, a thrift store, the tavern my great-grandfather liked to frequent, a Chicano streetwear store where we bought earrings that dangled all the way to our shoulders and La Raza t-shirts, and a Mexican psychic my grandmother would go to for spells and advice. As far as I can remember, it's always been considered a bad neighborhood, with a mob history, drug dealers, prostitutes, violence, robbery, and the old Motel Capri, site of perpetual police tape. There was an aging hooker whose name I never knew, but we saw her all the time, walking up and down the avenue. She looked exactly like the fairy tale witch in your mind, tall and skinny, with black hair streaked with white, a long nose, a jutting chin, and warts. Like Cruella de Vil and the hag with the poisoned apple had a baby. Like at any moment she'd turn into a bat or whirl on us all, I too shall bestow a gift on the child. It was summer, and I remember seeing her in a black and white striped dress, wedge sandals. Sometimes she'd be pushing a shopping cart. One day while we were at the grocery store, I saw her browsing the juice and pop aisle. She had bent over to look at something on the bottom shelf, and her short skirt rode all the way up. I can never unsee what was underneath. Her sagging pussy lips, the tangle of gray pubic hair of alarming length, spilling like Spanish moss down the insides of her thighs. My grandmothers were both there. For a moment, we were all transfixed by the vision, and later I would think of myself caught in the circle of three terrible fairy godmothers. Later, I would learn of the Duat, a part of the Egyptian afterlife through which the soul must pass, a place of gates and goddesses, of magic trees and walls of iron, of spirits and demons, of chimeras and sphinxes and the great chaos serpent, where the sun god Ra must travel each night to be reborn. And all I can think of was how the word Duat sounded like twat, and it brought me right back to Independence Avenue's very own Hecate, and how her vagina must have walls of iron, and how my grandmother took one look at me after I lost my virginity and knew, how my great-grandmother had the joy of sex on her bedroom shelf and made very little secret of her and my great-grandfather's swinger lifestyle. The Duat's hieroglyph is a star in a circle, and it was a strange star that shone on us all that day. I too shall bestow a gift on the child. Only one other person shared with us the revelation of the grocery store aisle dwat, an old man with a cane, standing amidst the cheap plastic barrel drinks and cases of RC Cola. My grandmother was the first to awaken from the spell. Cackling, she turned to the old man and said, "Did it wink at you?"
I love that so much, Lauren. Oh my God. That conjures up...
True story.
It rings of truth. And it conjures up so many memories. When I was seven, I went to visit my maternal grandmother in Blue Earth, Minnesota. And she's a devout Irish Catholic. So took me off to church early of a Sunday morning. And as we were walking, it was walking distance from her house on this hot summer day. Apparently the underwear on her, the elastic on her underwear had gone out.
Oh no.
And they just fell off. I mean, she's wearing a very dignified dress, everything, but they just fell off onto the sidewalk and she just like stepped out of them in her sensible pumps and just kept on walking.
I mean, what else do you do? You're not going to put them back on, I hope.
So
that's brilliant.
It's just the wildest thing to see as a seven-year-old, a resentful seven-year-old who's forced to wear an undershirt under her dress on a hot summer day because I'd woken up sneezing because I have allergies. I didn't have a cold. But the whole thing is just like, wow. Yeah. And I love the Spanish moss and the idea of not trimming pussy hair nowadays is just so aberrational for so many people. Maybe the pandemic has cured some of that.
I don't know. I feel like there's been a backlash with that, with a lot of women stopping shaving altogether. Uh-huh. Just everything. I've seen a lot of women with hairy legs and armpits and stuff, and
yeah,
more power to them.
Yeah.
But hey, Scott, after hearing you reread your penis poem, though, I remember, too, one of the other things that triggered the memory for me was the fact that you were opening the refrigerator and talking about taking things out. And so it made me think of the grocery store, too. So that's why I made sure to note that it was in the soda aisle.
With RC Cola. Have you guys seen Move In with Nancy? Move In with the apostrophe at the end?
Uh-uh.
You can find it on YouTube for free still, I'm pretty sure, in two parts. And it was made, I think, in, 1970, maybe. It's Nancy Sinatra and Lee Hazelwood and Frank Sinatra. Mm-hmm. It's basically a 90-minute commercial for RC Cola with pop songs and psychedelia.
Oh my gosh.
Nice.
Cool.
It's fucking nuts.
Sounds like it.
You need to
see
it. Do they
even make RC Cola? Do they still make RC Cola? I don't even know if they do.
I haven't had a...
I haven't seen it in years.
I haven't had something like a soda for longer than I can recall. I don't.
I am a soda addict, I'm sorry to say.
I'm allergic to corn, and most of them are made with corn syrup, so it's kind of a no-brainer.
Oh yeah, that's tough. It's tough to be in America with a corn allergy.
Actually, absolutely. It's kind of cool. I'm a good cook, and I just don't eat processed foods. So it's
better for you.
It's a win-win. Yeah. I like to cook, and I don't like to eat processed foods. I miss Fritos though.
Oh yeah,
so much. But yeah,
I'm Midwestern. You got to have corn. And also, and I'm Mexican too. So I just had corn tortillas with my dinner. So I can't imagine.
I miss eating at Mexican restaurants.
You guys get all kinds of cool stuff that we don't get in Canada. So yeah.
Do we? I thought Canada was the land of the cool.
You have healthcare though. So there's that.
We do.
Have poutine.
Poutine, yeah. You're right.
I probably said it wrong.
Poutine. Yeah.
So we have it in the Midwest too, but we call it poutine here.
Oh yeah.
But you know, poutine is what we say. Yeah, poutine. Yeah, yeah. So that's appropriate for this conversation.
You're referencing a Ted Nugent song now. Wayne Dang, sweet poutine. And I hate Ted Nugent with every fiber of my being.
Oh, with the burning hot passion. Yeah,
let me make that utterly clear. So
yeah.
I want to hear from Lillian now.
I was just about to say that, Scott. You took the words right out of my mouth.
I'll continue then and respond and read my poem that's in response to Scott's penis poem as well. And what I took out of that was the whole refrigerator thing. And this one's called Chester Albert. Every great memory starts with cereal and cartoons. The refrigerator, fridge, icebox, chiller. Bugs Bunny, Fred and Wilma, Dino, Cap'n Crunch, Fruit Loops, sometimes for lunch. This morning, my head is a passenger along for the ride. I'm told there are 100 billion nerves, trillions of synapses, or maybe I already knew that. Maybe I was married to a library for 39 years. The rain around here smells like piss. Some guy on the radio says he wants to grow a jazz spot. Middle name was Sphere. I hear it in Ugly Beauty, Epistrophe, in Ruby, My Dear. The forecast says it's going to hit 30 degrees. I pray to Anders Celsius, Swedish astronomer. I pray that the sidewalk doesn't melt. I have a stamp with his face on it, issued in 1982. I have a scar that looks like Fahrenheit. The milk is as cold as a bone I once found in the snow. This day is already failing me. I call my refrigerator Chester, mostly Albert. In the century before the 19th century, people collected ice in the winter, salted it, and wrapped it in flannel. My flannel shirt is my backyard, my confessional, and my witness. Albert Einstein and Leo Szilard patented the Einstein refrigerator. I've patented nothing. I have eyelashes, tiny tuning forks, bat vibrate until Chester Albert stops crooning. I have to make my way out of this lapse in judgment, this poem that tastes a bit too blunt, that bruises my brain, that might be wearing a skirt made of the entrails of every ghost I ever rebuff.
Nice.
So good.
My poetry slam snaps.
I love how Lillian weaves in mathematics and science into her poems. I love that so much.
Mm-hmm.
And music.
Yeah, and music, yes.
You have some Thelonious Monk going in there.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I was trying to explain what is so good about you guys to other people. I think on an interview I did, and I think all of us tend to go into the ether, right, in our own ways. And I think Lillian can jump in the ether so quickly to different places. Boom, boom, boom. You're very quick. And Lauren will take you into the ether, but she'll show you the way and show you the path as she walks, and you'll see everything. And I'm kind of in between those. Sometimes I go really fast and boom, you're somewhere else. But we're all kind of somewhat doing the same thing in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree. You all, and I see a lot of science, mythology, allusions to music in all of your poetry.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's sort of like, I was just going to say, it's kind of like we're all kind of grasping for the, you know, ungraspable. Mm-hmm. And we like capturing that moment, you know, because everything's always changing and moving. And you just want to capture that moment and bring everything you can into it. That's how I feel like what we're all kind of doing. And I think, like Scott said, we all do it very differently. But I mean, there's that same sensibility when it comes to what we're trying to do, I think.
I agree. I think you all,
I agree too.
You all dwell in kind of the realm of the ineffable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even in the stuff that's not about that, I think all of our, even you look at our whole body of work, we're all kind of all doing that, even not in this work.
Uh-huh. I had a professor who said that it's the job of the poets to take what is inaccessible and make it accessible. Uh-huh. And I think that's kind of what the three of us are always trying to do, you know, but we just have that same sort of worldview where we're trying to connect things across time, space, and possibly dimensions.
Yeah. Definitely dimensions.
Yeah. We're all kind of like, not concerned with, but just we're always thinking about the metaphysical, right? And how that connects back down to all those little minute details of everyday life, you know, the quotidian, right? We're all trying to connect all that together.
Well, I was raised Catholic, and in fact, the professor I'm referring to was a priest because I went to a Catholic university, and I consider myself culturally Catholic. I don't consider, I'm not Christian, but I always like the allusions to sparrows in the Bible and the mustard seed. You know, I've always thought that poets, there can't be anything that's beneath our notice. You know, there's no such thing as an unimportant detail. And so, you know, I feel like what we do is, you know, like Lillian said, you know, we are always aware of the quotidian, but trying to connect it to, you know, the metaphysical.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that.
Should we do another round?
Yeah.
I think you certainly should. We're just going to, this is all about Midnight Glossolalia and me just celebrating this super exciting book that's about to come out. And my friendship with you three, which I really very much appreciate.
Yes.
We love you as well. I mean,
I love you guys.
I can't think of a better publisher, honestly, to do this.
I love
the way you explained it. go ahead.
I've got such a long distribution arm and promotional arm. In other words, not really at all. But thank you for. But
this is more important to be done right.
Well, and I always want, you know, you always want a publisher who believes in you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's really all I want.
Yeah. You want people who get it, you know?
I feel like I might get you guys. I feel like I might.
I think you got it when you said that it's, the whole book is like taking a gram more psilocybin than you anticipated and having to write it out.
And like a fever dream.
Yes.
I think I'll go with this one. I don't know why I knew my coworker would believe all my ghost stories, but she did and had better ones than me. Growing up on the Navajo reservation, she spoke of skinwalkers, coyotes, which crawled into men and scoured the low scruff between branches, picking off sheep or cats and sliding back into the chaparral and a lost cousin whose body was never found. Or the time she and her sister drove across the Red Plains at night and saw a hatch open in the sky and a clutch of lights enter and the drawer of black night shut again. And they didn't get anyone to believe them, but I did, because why would she make this up? And I have felt my departed family whisk by me. I have felt a dead foot step on me as I slept on the floor of my wife's uncle's house, which creaked with 2 a.m. footfalls. I have lifted up the protective screen on this plane and seen the wormholes and snake whirls burrowing. It is so nice when someone can also see, but this is something not to talk about and not to retell, and we will shut this window. Now we will talk nice to the tilted gray woman in the train station, which is now a brush-grown parking lot. We will close all the doors except this one, where each of us is an inside-out ghost walking in blood pelts, where each of us will go out of this mansion one day and leave the floor cracked.
Lovely.
Wonderful.
Excellent.
Love it.
The person that's actually about, my coworker who actually did grow up on a Navajo reservation, she's one of my friends. And when she saw it published, she was like, oh my God, Scotty, that's about me.
That's so cool.
It was really neat. And we're really good friends. And it's funny, we weren't great, super great friends at work, but now she doesn't work there anymore. We're like better friends because we're both
that
really
can happen.
Yeah.
She loves heavy metal and horror movies. So
I love her.
Kind of woman. Yeah, so I love her too already.
Me too.
She's great. Totally awesome. So anyway, I'll stop gabbing about that.
I appreciate the gab. I love the images too. And just the dead foot. I don't know. I just picture the opening animated Terry Gilliam sequence to Monty Python's Flying Circus TV show and the foot
Oh, right. Bigfoot. That's right.
Yep.
Just, that's the thing. These are so imagistic.
And that happened too. I had a, her uncle's house was super haunted and I could hear things at night and I actually felt something step on me and I freaked out. I like I'm jumped sure. up. Wow. Oh my God. I'm like pretty psychic. So I feel things that other people don't. And man, I just like, how can you guys live in this house? There are like three people in here that are not living. It's just, anyway, creepy.
Wow.
Yeah. I guess I should read next because we were kind of going to read in alphabetical order. Does that make sense? Is that okay?
Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay. So this next poem, just a quick bit of context. I guess this is kind of one of the poems that I probably wouldn't have had the courage to write had I not been working with Scott and Lauren and
goaded on.
And they just kind of opened everything up for me. So just, my mom died when I was really young, like 7 years old. And we lived with my dad for a long time until he remarried. So that's all you need to know about this one. What my father wrote, he wrote on my brother's skin. The world ended where our driveway met the daffodil. I remember years of darkness, barely a light bulb or two, dirty laundry, and my brother setting botched fires. Sometimes my father's ache was a fist, sometimes a Chevrolet. My brother, the river he bled, and I, just a tiny hollow-boned sparrow, unable to call out for mercy. A broken mouth, the moment sound scattered. My father busting out of himself, jawbone, kidney, breathe. Oil, puddles of milk, a life before this life, cancer, everything I can't tell you. Maybe that's how history is made. Maybe the house grew into a memory hole, an entry wound that swallowed back all our orphaned parts. Maybe nothing was far-fetched. Maybe by spell or by song, a church could grow between the stitches. Maybe the body could hex itself out of heredity. We counted it in dog years. One, much less harrowing than seven. The length of time she tried with magic too weak to save us. The sad steps of my ghost mother as she moved from room to room, gifting us honey, coins, water, and a pair of finches, phantom ruby hearts, one each with which to begin again.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Gorgeous.
So beautiful. All of you are just so great at just painting vivid pictures in your readers' minds.
Thank you.
And another thing, I think all of us, we're not doing it to show off.
Mm-mm.
I think I've realized that about all of us is we're not trying to show off.
It really comes through. You don't have any of that. Look at me, Ma. I'm writing.
Right. Right.
Feeling it feels like instead somebody was pulling these pieces out, maybe against your will, from your guts.
Yes.
Sometimes felt like that for sure. Yeah,
that's the sense I got.
You know, the other thing I wanted to just quickly say, the other thing about writing this collaboration is that, I don't know about you guys, but I really felt that it gave me the opportunity to kind of like write across, you know, lines of difference, like different language, different culture, different, you know, because we all have such different experiences. But all those experiences in the end brought us together.
Yeah.
And there was, again, that kinship. Yeah.
Well, I think the three of us are from different generations, aren't we? I think there's three. We represent three.
I think so.
Scott, yeah. You're a Gen Xer. Yeah.
I think. I don't know, Lillian. Are you Gen X as well?
No, I'm 62.
Okay, so you're from what I like to call, because I feel like the
not a boomer.
Well, I feel like
not quite a boomer.
No.
No, I feel like the designation boomer. Why is there a generation that spans 40 years?
I know, it's insane.
And none of the rest of them do. So what I decided I belong to, and probably you too, Lil, is the film strip generation.
The microfiche generation.
It's a very specific and short-lived piece of technology that only those of us from this point of time recall, because I don't feel like I'm a boomer. And
We actually are boomers. I just looked it up. Yeah, but it seems weird, right?
Look at how long the span is. It's like, why is it 40 years? That's nonsense. We're from the film strip generation. Screw that boomer nonsense.
Love it.
But it's funny that you say, like, we are from three different generations, but our sensibilities are, like, we're so connected in so many ways, you know? So that tells you a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, the sensibilities are the same. But I think part of that widely varied experience comes from, we're all at very different points in our lives. Mm-hmm. And then again, we're all from different generations. So we have different, that informs our worldview too. Mm-hmm. I have different pop cultural touchstones than the rest of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and are you millennial, Lauren?
I am, yes.
Yeah. And Scott, you're probably Gen X.
I'm Gen X, I was born in 69.
And Lil and I, as we've established, are of the film strip generation.
Right.
Not boomers.
Nope. No.
And try saying, okay, film strip generation. Doesn't have the same,
I love For the record, though, I have used a microfiche.
Oh, cool. So do you guys mind if I just excuse myself for one quick second? I'll be right back.
Sure,
and
then
we'll hear
the
final poem, and you guys take care of yourselves if you need to.
Okay. I was wanting to read Threads of God, but is that too long?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Is that the one that has like the seven parts?
No. I would not read that one. That one's super long, or I would just read like a part of it, since at least the seven components are kind of their own. I've actually, all the ones that have been published from that one have all been published as like seven separate poems.
Oh,
so that,
wow. Right. Okay.
Yeah. But no, I didn't want to read that one. I wanted to read Threads of God, but that's a super long one.
How long is it, Lauren?
It's about it's almost two full pages.
Oh, go for it.
Words.
Just go for it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Like that's my favorite one. That one is one of my favorite ones that came out of this one. Mm. And like we've been saying, I would not have had the nerve to write about some of this stuff on my own.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's so cool it gave us that, I don't even know what, that courage or that, not even, I don't even know if the word is courage, but just, it just opened things up, It was such a great experience.
And it wasn't hard. Like to me, I struggle with writing. This was not hard. It didn't feel like a struggle at all. Mm-hmm. It felt like I had to take a break for every once in a while, but it was so easy to write with you guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you guys caught me. I'm drifting into a prose phase. So I really did have to scrape this out of myself, but I think it turned out, I think that was good. I was going to say, I listened to, your podcast on this show, Scott, and you guys were talking about that I write a lot of long poetry, and I was I actually don't. It's funny. I did for this. I feel like this collaboration gave me permission to be kind of a messy bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where I could just tear my own guts out and smear them on the page.
Oh my God, we're going to have to keep whatever happened while I was using the restroom in the podcast, because it sounds like it was good. Okay. I'll leave it up to my husband. Well, also up to you guys. So I feel like I disrupted the, I experienced this whole reading very much as I was taking part in weaving a braid, maybe inside out braid. And I only let two of the strands of this most recent cycle happen. So I guess it's time for the third strand to get woven in.
Okay, I wanted to read Threads of God. Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it, he touched my mouth and said, "See how this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." Isaiah 6:6-7. Missouri is one of the most snake-infested states. Garter snakes get in through the plumbing, through cracks in the foundation. Once I heard my mother screaming in the shower. A snake had slithered in through the pipes and wound itself around her ankle. I think screaming was the appropriate response. I remember her standing in the kitchen, wrapped in a towel, hair still wringing wet. My uncle, the snake killer, came to our rescue. It was just a little garter snake, but all the same, he took it out back and squashed its head with a brick. For such a harmless creature, I think that was a less appropriate response. Literal overkill. If you crack a snake like a whip, its neck breaks and it dies instantly. I saw him kill a copperhead that way once. He ate snake in Louisiana and in Mexico and found their flesh to be quite tasty if prepared right. When I was a little girl, my abuela would make sopa seca de fideo con carne y papas. She said more than once, this is the food of the gods. If we want to split celestial hairs, it was angel hair and not god hair. Either way, those follicles were heavenly, like eating a relic. The first time she sent me to the market by myself was to buy the pasta, the same market where we bought chorizo and moseca and queso fresco. I kept repeating the unfamiliar phrase, pasta cabello de ángel, por favor, all the way to the counter. I don't remember eating it in the winter, only in summer. Abuela said, hot food is best for hot weather. And it's true, it triggers a sweat response in the body, which cools you down. It's easy for snakes to cool down. They're cold-blooded creatures. All they have to do is find a shady spot. Some say snakes also yawn to release excess heat. We couldn't stop eating the god food, no matter how red the thermometer got. The boiling pot, our drinking glasses, our upper lips, all beaded with perspiration. Impatient, I always burned my mouth on the first bite. The nape of my neck damp beneath my hair. If it's possible to train your mouth to handle hot things, I think I've managed it. As a teenager, I worked at a pizza joint. Two open ovens running constantly made me think of that place as Hell's Kitchen. I didn't know what hell was yet. The first summer I worked there, the AC broke down. I only got a 30-minute break during my shift, so I learned to eat my employee meal straight out of the oven, bolting it down in 5 minutes flat. With my remaining 25 minutes, I would write poems. A friend remarked that I must have an asbestos mouth. I could never walk over burning coals, but I could probably hold one on my tongue, like a communion hose. In my spit, it would sizzle, die with a hiss, a gulp of ashes. A year and a half or so into watching my husband skirt death, I started dreaming of snakes. He'd already lost 30 pounds from vomiting and lack of appetite. The food of neither God, nor angels, nor man could tempt him. His hair had fallen out. I was working two jobs and not sleeping. Home dialysis, plastic tubes snaking from the machine to his belly and out again. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw fangs and scales. Our old house had a cracked foundation and snakes were always getting in. Our cat was a snake killer. Well, she never actually killed them. She just wanted to toy with them, as if they were balls of yarn or ribbon. Maybe that's worse. Flies to wanton boys and all that. She would bring them up to the kitchen and dump them right next to the supply vent, yowling in triumph. We would find them there, coiled, stunned beneath the air conditioner's icy breath, on the brink of brumation. We'd put them outside in the sun to thaw. I went to Mass. It was the first time I'd been to a regular church service in 15 years. Christmas, Easter, and Ash Wednesday don't count. It was July, sopa seca season. Not even 10 a.m. and the air already thick like guisado. I got to the church early to enjoy the dim, cool stillness of the sanctuary, to give the sweat time to dry to my steaming body. From above, I heard a rustling and looked up to find the ceiling drifting with angels. Seraphim to split that celestial hair. Dozens of them, multitudes. Holy, holy, holy. They were mostly biblically accurate. Three pairs of wings, a head in the center, but white and incandescent as the astival sun. Seraph, meaning to burn. Seraph, meaning venomous desert snake. Su filandeo is the rarest type of pasta in the world, from Sardinia. It means wires, or yarn, or threads of God. Perhaps 10 people in the world know how to make it. The semolina dough is kneaded for a long time. It must be very soft in order to make strands capable of connecting heaven and earth. The dough is rolled into 8 long, thin snakes, which are folded, halved, pulled, folded, halved, pulled, over and over, 32 times. A precise procedure that produces precisely 256 strands of God thread, even finer than angel hair. I imagine the process is meditative, like saying the rosary, like painting an icon. The strands are stretched across a tray woven from asphodels, the flowers of the dead, of Hades the unseen, white as angel wings. To aid in the stretching, the dough is occasionally dipped in salt water. The timing of such baptisms can only be sensed. It cannot be taught. any more than I can teach you how to see serifs or smile through a mouthful of burning coals. The threads of dough are layered and left to dry in the sun, creating something that looks like woven cloth. For the meal, the pasta is broken into pieces and boiled in mutton broth, flavored with sheep cheese. Lamb of God, you take away the sins of the world. Eat and know that I am God, wending my way through your gastrointestinal tract, your gut brain, the recipient of revelations your brain could never hope to digest. O Lord, our fiber will be threaded and shuttled through your divine loom, a fresh line in the tapestry. We will warp, or maybe we'll weft. The frame is invisible, made from stuff that grows in the fields of the underworld. Someday I hope to go to Sardinia and eat the holy, holy, holy fideo. I hope one of the grandmothers there will teach me the steps and I can train my hands to do the rest. The flame and the snake and the angel are all the same. I am what I am. I am what I eat.
Woohoo.
Wow.
Love. So much.
Such a good one.
So there's such a generosity there of experience and image, experience and food, and I love the sense of the recovered Catholic. Maybe just because I'm also one.
Yeah. I think a lot of us go through. I think a lot of Catholics go through the, you know, the ex-Catholic phase, and then they never get beyond that. I think I've gotten beyond the ex-Catholic into, you know, embracing the way it's made me. You know, embracing. Yeah, like I said, I'm. You know, now I tell people I'm culturally Catholic.
I love that.
I embrace that part of myself, but I don't. You know, and I would enjoy going to Mass, but I've, you know, on principle, I can't go with the, you know, the sex abuse scandals. I just, mm-hmm. I cannot support, you know, we can't support that. Mm-hmm. And I'm so very disappointed in the current Pope's, you know, total lack of, you know, action there.
Not brave at all.
No. And, you know, I went to a Jesuit college, and so we were really excited when a Jesuit got appointed to, you know, to the Holy See. And now it's like, Frankie, really? Really?
Yeah, it's very disappointing.
He was supposed to be better.
And we'll be back in just a moment.
We have a very generous partner to Meet for Tea. We really appreciate them very much because it's through ad support that we stay in print. So without further ado, let me tell you about Sucre Bay. Sucre Bay is perfume made by weirdos like you. And they're a cruelty-free, women-owned indie perfume and body products company who love making people smell good. Each scent is crafted by hand in their Washington State lab located in the woods. And honestly, I don't know where else you can find fragrances with names like Sea Hag, Don't Panic, Siren Song, Goth as Fuck. Those are just a few of their best sellers.
So great.
They have all sorts of other things too, bath care products. And also they partner with a lot of interesting people, including our friend Sarah McCartney of 4160 Tuesdays. Sucre Bay is one of the few places in the States you can get yourself some 4160 Tuesdays fragrances.
Yes. So head on over to sucrebay.com. Check out their wares, and we thank them.
Check
for
the show notes for the proper spelling.
Mm-hmm. And thank you very, very
or
much.
Should I do it on Sucre Bay now?
Oh yeah, you know what? How's it spelled?
Yeah. So if you just go to sucrebeille.com, that'll get you there.
Yeah. We really appreciate their support. Thank you so much, Sucre Bay.
Thank you so much, Sucre Bay. We love you.
Meet for Tea is the ticket, a buffet of the sublime, the valleys and beyond, avant-garde review, a cirque of word and visual art, film and music performance, served up by impresario Elizabeth McDuffie and Sohn Lab's sound guru Mark Allen Miller, putting a crisp five-star multimedia cool out there. And who, I ask you, wouldn't want a piece of that?
And welcome back.
I feel like a Catholic childhood sets one up well to grow up and embrace paganism.
For sure. For sure. I mean, we eat God. There's no, I can't think of anything more pagan. You know, all the fires and stuff. I took a friend one time to Night of the Tomb for, you know, right before Easter. Mm-hmm. And there's so much, turning all the lights off in the church, and then, you know, setting fires and filling the holy water font. And he was like, my God, this is so pagan.
It's very witchy.
Yeah. Very.
Yeah.
Lighting candles and all that.
Mm-hmm. Lighting candles. And also that there's a pantheon.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
And a mother goddess.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I mean, Catholics had to bridge the way to Christianity from mm-hmm. pagan Europe. So it's, you know, kind of, it just worked out that way.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, by the way, bright in bulk blessings to you all.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
What I was going to say about Lauren's poetry and her pieces, I love listening to her read, because even when you read them yourself, but especially when you hear her read, I have the feeling that she's telling me a story. She's just mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm going to tell you something that happened, right? It's just like, it starts off, most of them start off very sort of like almost pedestrian, right? Like here's a memory, here's a story. And then she goes into this beautiful kind of, it just opens up and goes into all these wonderful places and these images. And then all of a sudden it's like, this is a poem. This is no longer a story. This is no longer a memory. It's just, I just love how they begin with like this little kernel and then just go all over the place and expand and bring you to all these wonderful places.
The fiction writer in me just loves that you said that. Also, always, what do you say? Who is it that said always be a poet even in prose?
Yeah, yeah,
yes,
yeah. But I was also Lillian actually is the person, you know, that you're the reason that I wrote all of these prose poems in this book. Because hey, Elizabeth, I don't know if you remember my Treasures of the Tsar poem that you published in Neat for Tea.
Of course I do. How could I forget?
Yeah, that was like the first. Oh, good. That was the first like prose poem I'd only written like maybe one or two prose poems before this, but I was reading Lillian's work, and I love how she writes. You know, her poems are structured in paragraphs, mm-hmm. and you know, are kind of prose poems, a lot of them. And so I really loved that. And so Lillian actually inspired me to write the Treasures of the Tsar poem that way. And so that's how that one happened. And then that's why. All of these, that's partially why all of these happened. But like I said, the other reason is I kind of hop back and forth between poetry and prose. And I've been writing poetry for several years now. And I, you know, right when Scott asked us to do this, I was starting to drift back to, you know, back to fiction and poetry and prose.
Do you read Russell Edson at all? Lauren, do you know?
I have not.
Russell, you want to know that name. I'll email it to you. But Russell Edson, he's no longer with us, but his prose poems are fantastical and magical. I think you'd feel a kinship.
That sounds great.
Not a poem either. I'll have to check him out for sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before I went rogue and started Meat for Tea, I was a college professor, so... some of that stuff just remains forever. Can you believe we've been going for over an hour already? Doesn't it go so fast?
Oh, yeah.
It goes really fast. I know.
It goes.
It does.
So fast. So I don't, as you've experienced and as Scott knows and probably told you, I don't interview my guests at all. I just like to get you talking and have you talk to each other. But I do have three questions I ask everyone at the end.
Do it.
I'm going to do it now. So
do it.
Do it. That just reminds me of that scene from Liquid Sky. I don't know if you know that movie, but it's pretty mm-hmm. great. Anyway, what are you guys reading these days?
Right now, I just started a book on voodoo.
Ooh.
It's kind of an overview of the voodoo religion.
Nice.
That's awesome.
What's the title? Who's the author?
It's A Beginner's Guide to Voodoo. And I'm probably going to butcher this name.
That's okay.
Isunde Becau, B-E-C-H-A-U.
Cool.
I've been reading a lot of Daniel McGinn. I'm doing, I jumped right into another collaboration with somebody else that I knew from California.
Awesome.
You collaboration slut.
Yeah.
I know.
I am. And he brought it up because we were talking on Facebook. And I've been reading some of his stuff. He has a book called 1,000 Black Umbrellas. And he has another book called, I hope I don't get this wrong, The Moon, My Lover, The Dog, and My Mother, which is wonderful. Really, he says the poem. He doesn't get too fancy. He doesn't try to show off. He states things very clearly, and they just reverberate and are awesome. So, love it.
Oh, my God. That's exciting. I know you guys, I feel like I'm going to have to embark on a writing collaboration soon. You're giving me the itch.
It's super fun.
It really is. It's contagious, like chicken pox.
Yeah.
I feel like I've got it.
I'm reading 32 Words for Field, Lost Words of the Irish Language. It's a fascinating nonfiction book by this Irish fellow who's trying to revive the old Irish language. And I'm also
Did that prompt that one poem that you wrote recently?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I love that poem.
Oh, it was so much fun to write. Oh, my God, those words are just phenomenal, astounding. And I'm also reading... something about how stuff works, a book about the periodic table, the history of the periodic table.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
My weird science fascinations.
I don't think it's weird at all. I think science is, I'm fascinated by science. I love it. I'm going to employ it again, like I do every Friday morning when I take my 51-year-old sourdough starter out of the fridge and make it into 11 and let it sit until it can pass a float test and then make my dough. And all of that is just a whole bunch of molecular science happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And bacterial science and all kinds of factors. So I think anyone who's not interested in science, I don't know. I don't want to meet that person very badly.
No, for sure. In another life, I would have liked to have been an entomologist. So I like your science fascination too.
I should introduce you guys to my friend Sloane Tomlinson, who's a visual artist who's also an entomologist who does he does a lot of cool visual art, but he also does a whole series categorizing different insects. And yes.
I love that. That would be just such a, I've worked in higher ed for 14 years now, I think. And, I worked with a guy who, was an entomologist and he'd gotten to work at the Smithsonian.
Ooh.
You know, displaying bugs and, you know, doing taxidermy insects and things like that. I just thought that was the coolest thing.
I think if you could marry entomology and etymology, you might have my perfect field.
yeah, for
That's
sure.
Awesome, yeah.
I like how people get those mixed up. It's really hilarious.
Do you or do you have disdain for those people? I have to admit to having a little disdain.
A little, but I totally get why your tongue might slip there.
Yeah. It's funny how you say about mixing things up. Years and years ago, I used to run a small press called the Surrealist Poets Gardening Association. And publish some little books here and there. And I always got mail from these horticultural societies inviting me to these different things. And I'd be like, guys, no, you just don't get it.
Hilarious.
It was great.
Back in the early days of Meat for Tea, I got all kinds of emails from various teapot manufacturers and tea companies around the world.
Hilarious.
I never got any free swag out of them, not for lack of trying.
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you just send me some samples?
Yeah, yeah, send me your shit. What is that teapot? That looks pretty glam. So,
yeah.
So anyway, what are you guys listening to these days? What's on your turntable, or however you're putting music into your ears?
You know, I've been revisiting some Robin Hitchcock.
Love
Globe of Frogs.
Love him.
Oh, go ahead.
Love him so much. Yeah.
I thought that Globe of Frogs would be the perfect companion album to our book. It's very surrealistic and bizarre and wonderfully catchy and weird. So That's what I've been listening to a little bit.
Have you caught his living room concerts? I sent you a link.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. Now I can see those, and now I follow him on Facebook, and he's just a very humble, funny, weird guy.
He's so sweet, right?
He is.
He's delightful. You're making me think, Scott, not to exert any pressure, but it might be cool if you guys made a Spotify playlist to accompany your book when it comes out. You know, sounds.
Yeah, we could definitely build one just, you know, from the music references alone in the poems.
Right? Just sounds for readers to put into their ears while they're reading Midnight Glossolalia.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that to come into being.
And kind of like going back to old stuff that I used to listen to, like some really cool old gospel stuff, like the Five Blind Boys of Alabama. And then kind of like, I don't know why I have like, I didn't really listen to Dylan a lot as a young person. I'm like kind of going back to some of his stuff. Well, the period where you could understand what he was singing, not that weird period when he went through that bizarre. Going through that too. Yeah. And then I always kind of really love, I don't know if you guys know who Shaky Graves is. He's,
yes. Yeah. You turned me on to him.
Yeah. In one of the poems I wrote about him, but yeah. So just kind of that these days I'm kind of listening to that. Yeah.
Cool. Love it.
I'm also listening. I'm also mostly going back to like old stuff. Like I'm listening to a lot of 80s because, you know, I was born in the 80s. And so when for a while I didn't like 80s at all because I'm like, that's what my mother listens to. And now I'm finding that, I'm finding it very comforting for some reason, probably because it was the sound, it was the background sound from my childhood. Mm-hmm. And also I've been trying to dig up old classic Mexican music that my grandmothers listened to.
Oh yeah.
They liked They liked very syrupy Mexican ballads, and I hated those too when I was a kid. And it's the same story. I hated them when I was a kid, and you know, now I'm like, I really missed that.
They like Flaco Jimenez. I love him. Do you know Flaco Jimenez?
Uh-uh.
I have to look it up.
Yeah, you have to send me that.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I've just been exploring other people's Spotify lists for like, you know, classic Mexican music and Mexican guitar and things like that. And then it's funny you said we should make a playlist for the book because I soundtrack my stuff. And so I've been listening a lot to a soundtrack I made for a story I was working on.
Nice.
Cool.
Because I'm really, really, really dorky that way.
I love that kind of dorkiness. I celebrate dorkiness and am proud to be a dork.
Absolutely.
Dorks unite.
Right.
Dorks are always the cool people anyhow.
Yep.
Absolutely. Totally. Not to be confused with sort of the incels that were celebrated in like the 80s films about like Revenge of the Nerds and stuff. That was gross. Incel culture.
Gross.
Really gross.
Yeah.
I knew we'd be on the page about that. So, Lauren, I'm curious, so specifically 80s music your mom listened to, specifically what? Tell me an artist, a song.
Oh, she also liked syrupy stuff, but you know, American. So she liked like Anita Baker, mm-hmm. and she liked Steve Winwood, and just really, really cutesy. You know, she liked Starship, and
Starship so much.
she loved it. Air Supply.
Build this city.
Worst song in the world.
Yeah, she liked Air Supply and Phil Collins. She was a big Phil Collins fan. Oh my god,
that's so funny. We would not.
Isn't it? Well, my mother, it's so funny because, you know, she's first generation American, and so, you know, when she was younger, she didn't, you know, the only thing she liked Motown when she was a kid. She didn't like white music. So like, I didn't even really know about the Beatles till I got to high school and other kids started telling me about other music that was out there.
Reasonable.
Yeah. And so it's funny. So like now, she doesn't know. There are just like such huge swaths of pop culture that my mother does not know about. So like I was with her in the car the other day and she was like, you know, the oldies station, she's like, I don't recognize any of this music anymore. I don't know why they're calling it oldies. And she's like, yeah, it's just weird stuff.
It's like, and so I was like what?
You know, and we turned it on. And I was like, that's Queen, mother. That is Queen. That is not weird stuff. And she's like, well, I don't know who that is. And then I was like, that's ZZ Top. I don't know. And she was like, well, I don't know who that is either. It's weird to me.
That's so funny. And at that same period of time, because I'm coming to understand I might be your mother's age, but I was the punk rock girl. So my 80s playlist was like Sisters of Mercy and Dead Kennedys and
nice. Oh, good stuff. Butthole That's good stuff.
Surfers and
I love the Butthole Surfers
so much.
You know, their song Whatever is like one of my all-time favorite songs.
Do you know their earlier albums? I recommend Locust Abortion Technician.
Okay.
and there's a song, it's the cunt song, which is done to Middle Eastern music. And this like drone, nice. Like bum, 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 like cunt, 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 just like intoned. It's the most beautiful thing you ever heard. It's absolutely stunning.
I don't know how I've missed that song, because yeah, cunt is like one of my favorite words in the English language.
I knew I loved you for a reason. I wanted to start a podcast called Cunt just to rehabilitate the word.
Well, it's that's the thing about the word is that it's always gets a big reaction.
Well, and the weird thing about the word cunt is its roots in antiquity. It shares etymological roots with queen and quaint and, well, cubbyhole and cupboard. And it's the only word for that part of the female anatomy that includes the pleasure centers. The other ones are, well, like vagina, which people regard as more polite, translated out of the Latin, is just a sheath for one's sword. So that's cool.
Oh, good. Right. Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, gross. Give me cunt any day.
Yeah.
That's going to be the theme.
It's just such a good word.
This episode is going to be the cunt episode, I can tell.
There's a cunt episode and where they read the penis poem.
Yeah.
That's
and
right.
And the glossers. The glossers, the cunt, and the penis.
Oh my God. It all came full circle.
There you go.
I love it.
Well, you can see where our minds never stray from certain things too far.
Oh apparently. My God. I love it.
Again, to quote one of my professors, he always said, scratch an English major and you're going to get a pervert.
It's true.
So true.
Might be right. So yeah. Another question. This is so much fun, guys. Someday you're all going to come to my house and have my homemade bread and have a hang.
That would be awesome.
Absolutely.
What are you guys watching these days? What's going into your eyeballs?
We're watching The Last of Us with Pedro Pascal on HBO.
I want to see that.
I heard it was great.
I will warn you, the third episode will crush your soul. I don't cry a lot at like TV or movies. I bawled like a baby on the third episode. It has Nick Offerman as a guest star on it, and it is just It's like somebody said on Twitter, and I think this is a perfect description. It's like somebody took the first 10 minutes of Up, you know, by Pixar,
yeah,
and stretched it into an hour long episode. And mm-hmm. yes, it's that type of you know, heart wrenching story.
I adore
in an hour.
Adore Nick Offerman.
I haven't seen it yet.
No, it's on our list. We have to finish a couple things. We're watching The Patriot right now on Netflix, which is like political satire and farce and intrigue.
Yeah.
I got to see Nick Offerman on the stage in Boston playing Ignatius Riley in A Confederacy of Dunces.
Oh, really? Wow. Holy
jeez. Nick Offerman is so good, though. I love him to pieces.
Me too.
He's brilliant. It was
such my brother-in-law, David, who's been on this podcast and has published in Meet for Tea a bunch, but he bought us tickets, and it was such a treat just to be there live to see him. It was wild because they, you know, Nick Offerman himself is not obese, and the character of Ignatius Riley was, and they had him step into a fat suit at the beginning of the performance, and they show it.
Wow.
As the curtains open. It's a really cool production.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, I'm watching Happy Valley season 3. It's a British procedural. It's so good. It's so good. And I love those British, you know, dark British things. Mm-hmm. But we waited like quite a few years for the, because I think the first one was like in 2014 or something. So we waited for a long time for season 3. So it's been out just recently put out. So it's fantastic.
Thanks for letting us know. I loved that.
My husband and I, we love British procedurals too. So that's right up our alley.
Yeah.
I love British everything, pretty much. Comedy, procedurals. When did season 3 come out, Lil?
I think it was just like now, January something, like kind of the beginning of January, I believe. Yeah.
Cool. Because we were languishing.
Oh, yeah. And we rewatched recently again the Derry Girls. I don't know if you guys saw that, the Irish show, Derry Girls. Oh, so freaking good. So freaking good.
Delightful.
Yeah.
I haven't really been watching that much, but my wife just binged all of Handmaid's Tale. So I saw a little between things, and whoa, it was a very intense. But I don't usually sit myself in front of a TV very often nowadays, unless I get hooked on some kind of binge thing. That's probably one I want to watch from the beginning.
Have you read the books?
No, I have not actually read the books.
I would recommend.
Yeah. I haven't read the sequel, but the first book is, you know, I think seminal for a lot of young women.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got to, Margaret Atwood came to Mount Holyoke College promoting her book that came out a few years ago, The Heart Goes Last. And I had a copy of it that I'd purchased for her to sign, but I also brought her a recent copy of Meet for Tea signed by me to her and gave it to her as a gift. So Margaret Atwood has an autographed copy of Meet for Tea in her library. That's cool. As one does.
I like her poetry too.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I like a lot of her stuff. I like a lot of her other novels. Like I really love Alias Grace.
Me too.
So good.
There was a mini series made out of that, you know.
Yeah. I did. I saw that. I thought they did a really good job.
Me too.
I really liked I need to rewatch it because I saw it just the once when it came out. But yeah. We're also watching I've watched Interview with a Vampire twice now already.
Oh,
and
oh, yeah.
we tried the Mayfair Witches and I didn't love it. And I was watching it with a friend of mine and she said, and I think she was spot on. She was like, Interview with a Vampire was written for queers. She's like, and Witching Hour is clearly for the straight vanilla chicks who grew up watching Charmed.
Oh, gross.
And I was like, oh my God, I'll never be able to unsee that.
I consider myself advised because I was getting excited to watch the Mayfair Witches.
I was so excited because I love that book.
Me too.
I love the first book especially. Yeah, it's so good. But no, don't. Just don't.
And I do, I want to see Interview the Vampire. We will have to, we can only afford so many streaming platforms, obviously, because anyone who thinks that I'm getting rich doing Meat for Tea needs to get a new thought.
I think we've all got day jobs over here.
So we'll have to kill HBO or something before I can get Showtime back.
Interview is so good. It was everything I wanted it to be.
Ooh.
And I was not that, Claudia, I could kind of take or leave from the book or the movie, but the way they put Claudia in this adaptation is just brilliant. And I love her.
I can't wait to see it. We have to,
so good.
We've got to get Showtime again so I can start season two of Yellow Jackets when it comes out.
Yes, yes, we're waiting. We're waiting for that too.
Are you also obsessed?
I don't think I have your level of obsession, but I really, really enjoyed that one. I'm really looking forward. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one.
I can't wait. I would love to have people on to do a Patreon episode just talking about it when the season comes out. So consider yourself invited if you're interested.
Ooh, yeah, I would. That's another one. I like to rewatch a show before the new season comes out because Scott's like, I don't sit in front of the TV. I'm like, all I do is sit in front of the TV.
You and me both, sister. When I'm not reading submissions, I'm watching TV.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, and also the other thing, is when it's freaking like tonight, it's going to be minus 30 Celsius over here in Toronto. So it's like, where the hell are you going to go? What are you going to do, right? Stay home and watch TV.
Elizabeth, you have a brisk walk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Elizabeth, you have chronic health issues too, right? Because I do. And that's one of the reasons that I spend a lot of time watching TV and movies.
Yeah. Ehlers-Danlos and a few other possibly Sjogren's syndrome. My sister has it. I've got all the symptoms, but I haven't tested positive for it. But I don't like making the tedious rounds to all the doctor's appointments to get a diagnosis because, as you know, it can be a journey.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And sometimes I'm okay, F that. I've got projects I'm doing and, yeah.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to talk to you, Elizabeth, because my daughter's been sick since she was 13 and she's 28 now. And she's pretty sure, and we're pretty sure she has Ehlers-Danlos, but they keep telling her, oh, no, there's nothing wrong with you. So I'm going to have to talk to you about that.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
Well, yeah. And also if you're female, it's still the case where anything you're suffering from is going to be minimized. It became abundantly clear to me when I traumatically fractured a young, healthy hip just by landing on it on too hard of a surface and demolished my femoral bulb. But still, it took 4 hours for me to get pain medication. And
wow.
And
because you were overreacting, right? Yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah. But they had the x-rays, they could see the crushed femoral bulb. So there wasn't really a question that maybe something would have hurt. But my husband, like maybe a month after that, had some chest pains. It was like instant morphine.
Yeah, right.
So the gender inequity is so.
Oh, for sure.
So clear.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's gross.
It took me 15 years to get diagnosed with endometriosis.
Wow.
So, the classic. I've read that it's like it takes an average of like 9 years for most people to get diagnosed, and I only got diagnosed because I finally got a hysterectomy, and when they had me on the operating table, that's when they went, oh, she does have endometriosis.
What do you know?
Yeah.
We're ending this on such a happy note, aren't we? Let me lift this up a little bit. First of all, let's give a big like woohoo for the Midnight Glossolalia is getting ready to be unleashed into the world.
It is unleashed.
Like the Kraken.
Maybe Scott, you'll take it to AWP if you decide to go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's in my city, so I'll go and hopefully throw it around and champion it.
Are you just going to literally throw it just like frisbee style at people's
heads?
I'm going
to throw it at people.
Yes, please do.
I'll wear a helmet and and walk around.
I love that.
Throw it at people.
Hey, Elizabeth, we got two readings, you know, lined up for it to promote it for the three of us.
You guys rock.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we were talking about maybe just doing our own reading, like just having the three of us, you know, set up our own reading and find somebody to MC it.
Absolutely.
Awesome. I'm so excited.
Well,
so where should it?
Thank you guys so much.
Well, before I let you go completely, where should everyone find you and follow you all on your social medias, and where can they buy all of your cool shit other than just Midnight Glossolalia, which is cool shit people should be saving up for?
Absolutely.
You got to get this in everyone's Easter basket.
So I'm at fairypoetry.com. You can find me in all things that I do, I guess.
I'm mostly just on, well, I do Twitter and Instagram, but mostly Facebook. So I'm just under Lil Akov, LILLAKOV on Facebook. And yeah, you can message me or do whatever. And I'm there.
I'm at Lauren Sharhag on Instagram and Twitter. And you could just Google me, because as far as I know, there's only one Lauren Sharhag. And also my author blog is laurensharhag.blogspot.com.
Sweet. This has been
awesome.
So much fun, you guys. I feel like we could have gone for another hour, but I'm actually getting hungry.
This was great, Elizabeth.
This was so much fun. Yay.
Thank you so much.
So excited awesome. For the book.
It's gonna rule.
It's gonna rule. Yeah. It's gonna make the New York Times bestseller list, and New York Review of Books is gonna have it in their cover stories. That's what I project.
Right.
Love you guys, kisses and all that.
Thank you.
We love you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Love you too.
Bye.
All right.
Wasn't that wonderful?
That was great.
Aren't they lovely people?
Very lovely.
So talented. Yes. Where do you see their book? It's a beauty.
So we got some six-word stories.
We do. First one is from Lucia Mockney. The seed is a ground. The seed.
Wow, that's cool.
And this one is from our friend Tam Frickie. In bulk, a woman's fire burns clean.
Nice.
Thank you, guys.
Hi again, Tam. Very cool. Yeah, definitely check out the Meet for Tea Cast Facebook page. And we do calls for the six-word stories occasionally. And, you know, write one up and we'll probably read it here on the podcast.
We certainly will. Check out the Meet for Tea Facebook page, too. I've got all kinds of things like quotes. There's a quote of the day a lot of the times, or a word of the day. This happened very frequently, and I challenge people to use the word of the day in a sentence. So it's a fun way to stay engaged.
Yeah. One last thing before we head out for this episode is that we've got a couple Patreon supporters who support us at the $6 level.
Woohoo!
At the $2 level, you get everything that we put up on the Patreon page for you to listen to, or... you also get, if you do the $4 tier, you can get a PDF of every issue when they come out or shortly thereafter once I get uploaded. And if you do the $6 tier, well, we're just really grateful that you just wanted to pay us a little bit more. And we have a couple $6 tier people we'd like to thank, and that is Amy and Madeline. So thank you, folks.
Thanks very much.
You really help us keep us doing what we're doing. And I think with that, maybe we can say... See you in a couple weeks.
Sayonara, sweeties.
See you in a couple weeks.
The Meat for Tea cast is produced by Elizabeth McDuffie and Meat for Tea, The Valley Review. Mixed by Mark Allen Miller at Sohn Lab, East Hampton, Massachusetts. Visit Meat for Tea at www.meatfortea.com. Please consider going to anchor.fm to make a contribution through our contribution page. You can reach us through meatforteacast@gmail.com, or you can leave a voice message at anchor.fm/meatforteacast. We welcome suggestions for contents for the Meet for Tea cast. If you've attended a Meet for Tea circ and want to hear from one of the bands or one of the spoken word contributors, please let us know. All portions are copyright Meet for Tea and their respective holders. Vote for Meet for Tea on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Elizabeth. Meet for Tea on Instagram. And on the Meet for Tea and Meet for Tea cast Facebook pages. Meet for Tea is available everywhere you get your favorite podcasts.